These days, when there is news on the young Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, it isn't about mega projects or investment, but more about his involvement in the assassination of the dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi, or protests in countries like Tunisia, and a possible consideration for his arrest at the upcoming G20 summit in Argentina. In this edition of The Debate, we will look at all the ways that MBS is looked at negatively, from the war in Yemen to other crimes attributed to Saudi Arabia.
The murderer is not welcome in Tunisia. Shame on Tunisian rulers for receiving Mohammed bin Salman. This is how Tunisians reacted to a visit by Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman to their country. Tuesday's rally marked the second consecutive day of protests in Tunis, condemning bin Salman for his role in the killing of dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Similar protests were held in the North African country on Monday.
We cannot accept such a person who does not believe in women's rights or freedom of expression, who does not believe in anything. We simply cannot welcome him here in Tunisia.
Bin Salman's role in Khashoggi's murder in the kingdom's consulate on October 2nd has drawn global outrage and condemnation. Some 11,000 kilometers away from Tunisia and in South America, Argentine prosecutors say they are considering charging Saudi Crown Prince with war crimes and torture if he flies to Buenos Aires for the G20 summit this week. The move comes after Human Rights Watch wrote to a federal prosecutor in Argentina. The HRW urged the prosecution of bin Salman, who is at the same time the country's defense minister, for mass civilian casualties caused by the Saudi-led coalition's onslaught in Yemen and for the torture and crackdown of Saudi citizens, including Jamal Khashoggi. Meanwhile, five international charities on Monday urged the United States to halt all military support for a Saudi-led coalition fighting in Yemen, saying this will save millions of lives. A joint statement by International Rescue Committee, Oxfam America, CARE US, Save the Children, and the Norwegian Refugee Council said that 14 million people are at risk of starving to death in Yemen if Riyadh and its allies don't change course immediately. Also, the US senators say President Donald Trump is putting Saudi Arabia first by his decision not to take punitive measures against Riyadh or the Crown Prince. Senators Bob Corker and Bob Menendez have called on Trump to investigate the part bin Salman played in Khashoggi's murder after the CIA determined the killing was ordered by the Saudi Crown Prince. However, some analysts say it is unlikely that the U.S. and other Western countries take any serious measures against bin Salman because it is against their interests in the region.
The people of Tunisia, as well as, of course, people elsewhere, like in Bahrain, for example, in Kuwait, they are frustrated of Mohammed bin Salman being the instrument of the superpowers in the area.
Khashoggi's murder and Saudi-led coalition's war crimes in Yemen have made the dark humanitarian record of Saudi Arabia more manifest than ever. But the big question is when the U.S. and its allies will put the lives of millions of civilians before their political and economic interests.
Our guest joining us for this edition of The Debate, political commentator at the National Bugle Radio, Mark Dankoff, joins us from San Antonio. We have journalist and political commentator Brian Downing, who joins us from Washington, D.C. I'd like to welcome you both. Brian Downing, let me first start with you. This young prince, Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia, not very popular these days. We're looking in particular at these protests in Tunisia, second day running. And the Tunisians are not very happy with his arrival there. Why are they not happy with his arrival at their country?
Issue of Yemen, a war that makes really no sense in geopolitical terms, and also the murder of Khashoggi. However, stepping back a bit, a lot of people in the Middle East do not like Saudi Arabia because the Saudis are funding schools and mosques throughout the region, which inculcate their Wahhabist creed, their particular brand of Islam, which has brought about a significant percentage of the population being loyal not only to Wahhabism, but perhaps also to Saudi Arabia. And of course, in any nation, that's going to be a bit disconcerting. Some of those people, most of them are just very religious and perhaps overly loyal to Saudi Arabia, but some of them, a very small percentage, become jihadis and resort to terrorism in their own countries, where they join up in Syria and Iraq and elsewhere. And of course, they come home someday where they can practice the trade at home. So the Saudis are not very well liked anywhere in the world, even especially in the United States, I might say.
Mark Dankov, our guest, talks about something that I'm looking at, some of the statements there, in particular about how Saudi Arabia supports mosques that perhaps preach Wahhabism in one form or another. And I'm looking at these pieces of news that are outdated, maybe 3 years old, 4 years old. Saudi Arabia, Saudi-funded mosque, breeding extremism in Germany. The Vice Chancellor, Sigmar Gabriel, this is back in 2015, saying that Saudi Arabia must stop financing fundamentalist mosques, as he called it. So this is not anything new, but yet, throughout these years, all these countries, mainly Western countries like Germany, supporting Saudi Arabia. Do you think that Saudi Arabia has now fallen out of favor, now that you're looking at the most recent development regarding Khashoggi?
This is for me?
Yes, Mark Dankov.
Well, I think Saudi Arabia will increasingly fall into disfavor in the West when people in the West determine how much this relationship is going to cost them. Whether you're looking at the United States or you're looking at the Western Europeans, it's very, very clear that the Israeli lobby and the Saudi Arabians are driving American policy in the region, along with the American central banks in the petro community. But when it reaches a point where there's significant blowback, not only against the United States and its Western European allies in the Middle East region, but when Americans and Europeans start paying a real price for this in terms of their own loss of life due to increasing military actions in the region to support this nonsense, and when it begins to impact their own economies, then there should be, it would seem to me, both in the United States and in Western Europe, a real backlash against Saudi Arabia and against this Israeli-Saudi Wahhabic alliance that quite clearly is driving the entire world into disaster.
This alliance that he talked about right there, Brian Downing, that Mark Dankov just indicated, well, it's not official yet, but you know, the news keeps coming out regarding Saudi Arabia and Israel. First of all, how much damage does that actually spell for ordinary people from the Arab world, just the ordinary citizens? Because you know how Israel stands, the standing of Israel when it comes to just ordinary Arabs.
Well, I imagine people in the Middle East are very suspicious of this alliance between Saudi Arabia and Israel. First of all, for years, the Saudis have been very critical of Israel. They've been standing up for the Palestinian people and a Palestinian state. Well, they seem to have thrown that aside, and they are putting this geopolitical interest in opposing Iran at the top of the game. Well, I don't think that sits very well with a lot of people in the Middle East, and for those other reasons I said about the mosques and the jihadi influence, it just fuels the hostility to Saudi Arabia.
One of the aspirations, Mark Dankov, that Saudi Arabia has, and of course through this young prince, it wants to exert maximum effect on that, is to aspirations to be the leader of the Arab world. Now, we're looking at Tunisia, where you're having an Arab country act the young prince. Do you think that Saudi Arabia is losing any type of legitimacy that it may have had, especially with this young prince, whom, of course, is one of the suspects in the Khashoggi case?
I think that's absolutely the case, and it seems to me that when we look at this guy, Bin Salman, this is not simply a question of his direct involvement in criminal activity, namely the premeditated murder of a citizen of his own country who was killed in their own consulate in Istanbul, but one has to wonder about the man's mental stability, that he would not only be evil enough to sanction something like this, but that he could do something like this or order it done so brazenly when it would so obviously point back to him. So at this particular point, we're not only dealing with a criminal, it seems to me that we're dealing with a crackpot here, and his sanity has to be questioned at this juncture, not simply in terms of the Khashoggi killing, but as more people in the West look at sites like antiwar.com and learn precisely what it is that the United States and Israel are doing in supporting Saudi Arabia in Yemen, where up to 17 million people might die as a result of these Saudi military actions and Saudi naval blockades. This is, again, increasingly reprehensible, increasingly unsustainable worldwide. And once more, the United States and the Western Europeans, the average American, the average Western European, is going to become increasingly concerned when the next phase of these Israeli-Saudi wars begins and they start losing more of their own flesh and blood. And of course, I'm referring to specifically what seems to be an Israeli-Saudi-American plan to attack Iran.
That's one of the things, threats that has existed for quite some time, but not in that form or in that configuration. Brian Downing, Saudi Arabia throughout the years, and perhaps decades, is responsible for a whole list of what many see as violations. We can talk about human rights. We could start back from the 9/11 incidents, of which many of those nationals were Saudis. And we could perhaps talk about the war in Yemen. I mean, the list is, there are more to the list. There is more to this list. Do you think that the Khashoggi incident has brought all these things to the forefront, and now countries are realizing that they have to rethink their relationship with Saudi Arabia, in particular with this prince?
Oh, I think very much so. All those things are coalescing now into people in the United States and elsewhere asking, where is all this going? Where is this conflict between Saudi Arabia and Iran going? Do we want this region to be dominated one day by someone as ruthless, ambitious, and pitiless as Mohammed bin Salman? I don't think so. Let's look at the war in Yemen. It isn't really based on Saudi national security. It's based on religious hatred and the ambition of the prince to become the ruler of the region. The man is 33 years old. Let's see, the longevity rates, he could be ruler of Saudi Arabia for 60 years. That's a pretty daunting idea, I think, and one that I think security people in the United States, the Middle East, and perhaps even especially Israel should think about. What are the long-term considerations of having such a person in power in the region? And I don't think they're very good.
Mark Dankoff, you talked about how Saudi Arabia, Israel, and the U.S. obviously have an alliance, and one of their main intentions behind this is obviously to pose a threat to Iran. But at the same time, we're looking at reports, very recent ones, that indicate that Saudi Arabia itself is not on a solid footing. First of all, the Khashoggi incident has brought some of the princes out within the kingdom saying bin Salman should be removed. So there's somewhat of a power struggle. Some even have gone as far as saying there might be a coup there, be it maybe a soft coup or one form of another. Do you think that Saudi Arabia has a standing to want to even be in opposition to Iran in that alliance when the regime itself and the kingdom overall may be in danger?
Well, that's a very interesting question, and certainly I would think that domestically and within the House of Saud, so to speak, there would be a serious questioning of the mental stability of bin Salman and his recklessness that seems to stem from what is basically, I think, a relatively obvious, dangerous psychiatric condition. I mean, this guy is simply crazy, and even though there are other people who could replace him that would have equal animosity, presumably toward Iran, hopefully, if this man were replaced, he would be replaced by someone who understands that there are certain boundaries, at least, no matter how evil you are, that you don't cross if you're sane. But in this regard, some of these U.S. senators, curiously enough, who have been demanding of Mr. Trump that the United States rethink its relationship with Saudi, are at the same time very close to the Israeli lobby. I'm going to be curious to see how that plays out when obviously these guys are trying to posture as human rights defenders at the same time that up to now they've said virtually nothing about this genocidal war in Yemen and have not exactly been pointing out to their own constituencies that Saudi's chief aider and abettor in crime in the region, I might add, in many instances on behalf of the United States, sadly enough, has been Israel and Mr. Netanyahu. So it's going to be fascinating to see how that political fissure works in the U.S. as some of the people that are demanding Saudi's accountability are at the same time very firmly in Netanyahu's camp on anything that he wants.
Brian Downing, when we waited for the U.S. President Donald Trump to give out his opinion on what happened with the Khashoggi case, he was going to be briefed, which he did, and then came out with a statement on the whole situation. There was a press statement that came out, and it said that he was pretty much holding Iran as a threat to the world, and one of the things that he said was that Saudi Arabia is needed for the security of Israel. There was a unity conference just recently in Iran, the past few days, of which the Iranian president actually extended a hand out to Saudi Arabia. How does Iran pose a threat to Saudi Arabia when it makes that kind of a gesture, yet the U.S. president comes out and presents Iran as a threat in that respect?
Well, I don't think it does. Iran has some troops in Syria, but I don't think they pose any meaningful threat to Israel. If every Iranian, if every Hezbollah troop marched towards the Golan Heights, I don't think it would be too difficult a problem for the Israeli military to handle. I think I see this Israeli-Saudi alliance as based on Israel getting a pass on the Palestinian and organizing the Sunni powers in its on its side. As I said, that gives them a pass on the Palestinian issue. It gives them the opportunity, only the opportunity, to have sort of an economic sphere of influence throughout the Arab world. That may be how the Israelis think. I just can't see Israeli businesses opening shop in Riyadh or Cairo or elsewhere, at least not in the foreseeable future.
Mark Dankoff, ahead of this G20 summit, Human Rights Watch has put out a damning report and has actually made a request from the Argentine government to take a look at bin Salman's presence at that meeting, which he is supposed to go, and consider perhaps bringing charges against bin Salman. How likely do you think that is? And overall, how is he going to be received? Some of these countries didn't even pulled out some of the representatives from this so-called Davos in the desert, if you recall, just weeks ago, which showed how much support Saudi Arabia actually has lost over the Khashoggi case.
I doubt that they will actually arrest him at this meeting, this G27 meeting, although I think it would be a great development if they did. Obviously, it's a situation where if we really wanted to press the envelope, we could also talk about Israeli crimes in the region, including the Israeli, U.S., and Saudi Arabian use of both the Mujahideen-e-Khalq and some of these Wahhabic terrorist organizations, both to commit all kinds of criminal acts in Syria, and then falsely attribute them to Assad. But all these recent developments in Iran, including an assassination or two in Khuzestan province, which quite clearly were linked to Sunni Wahhabic groups that were directly in turn linked to Saudi Arabia. The fact of the matter is that bin Salman, if he comes apart like a cheap suit, we might wonder if there will be larger indictments against the entire royal house of Saudi Arabia, and if more people worldwide will begin putting the same amount of pressure on the Israeli regime for their criminal actions, both in their use of the MEK to assassinate Iranian nuclear scientists in Tehran, as well as Israel's criminal actions, their genocidal war in Gaza, their continued illegal settlements in the occupied territories, their use usurpation of East Jerusalem, all of which Mr. Trump supports, unfortunately, which belies his own America First ideology and proclamations in the 2016 elections. Frankly, what I'm hoping is that in the United States domestically, since Trump will be the Republican candidate and Kamala IPAC Harris is likely to be the Democratic candidate for the presidency of the United States, I'm hopeful that there might be a left-right coalition against the war that builds in this country that will support a candidate who will stay away from every other issue but the American empire and the need for the United States and the people of the United States to stay out of any more of these worthless wars being driven by the Israelis, being driven by the Saudis, being driven by our own central bankers, and being driven, of course, by the petroleum industry. That's not likely to be a development that will be forthcoming, but I sure would like to see it, because as things stand now, Trump has revealed that he's a fraud in terms of his America First proclamations. The Democrats are going to put up someone who is going to say that they're anti-war, but very firmly will be in the Israeli camp in regard to American foreign policy, which in turn ensures that they will do nothing about Saudi Arabia because of their relationship with Israel.
Is that true? Do you agree? Do you think, Brian Downing, that right now we're looking at a lot of senators, both, of course, the Democrats and also some from the Republican side, who are distancing themselves from Trump when it comes to this young prince? They want something done. They want sanctions to occur. They've actually done, they've exercised some sanctions against some of the Saudi officials not of a particular high rank. But do you see overall that Saudi Arabia is being seen as a liability?
I certainly think it is a liability, and I've been arguing that for many years in articles I write. If I could shift from the Senate to the lower part of the U.S. Congress, the House of Representatives, we're going to have a Democratic majority in there starting in a few weeks. And I think you're going to see them open up hearings about the relationship between the United States and Saudi Arabia and about the Khashoggi killing and various other things about our relationships with countries in the Middle East. That could become very embarrassing for the president, and it could just coalesce more and more opposition. Optimally, I'm just not convinced the United States is going to completely break with Saudi Arabia in the near future. I think the optimal situation is for the United States to stop providing intelligence and arms for the war in Yemen and coalesce some support from European countries and perhaps some Gulf states to prevail upon the House of Saud to say, this boy, Mohammed bin Salman, is bad for us, he's bad for you. Get him out of the line of succession. Get someone else in there, preferably some sort of collegial view arrangement of a half dozen princes. I'd like to see people outside the House of Saud, but I don't think that's going to happen. The most I expect to see is that enough pressure exerted to get him out of the line of succession and tell Saudi Arabia that we are not their 911 number, we are not their police, we are not their enforcers in chief. This is an equal partnership. You do things for us, we do things for you. Bear that in mind, Riyadh.
We'll leave it there. Thank you very much. Let me thank our guest, political commentator from National Bugle Radio, Mark Dankoff from San Antonio. And you're just listening to journalist and political commentator Brian Downing there from Washington, D.C. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Vitali, entire team in the capital, Tehran. It's goodbye.